what we do to girls in America is just sick. You put so much pressure on yourself. The world puts so much pressure on yourself because you're trying to look like Britney and J-Lo. Ashanti, you're trying to look like Hollywood. Let me tell you something, girls. You're beautiful just the way you are.
Keith Del Tano, teen relationships expert, will be speaking at the RUC fundraising banquet on April 21st at the Villa Milano restaurant. Make your reservations today at relationshipsunderconstruction.com. Adults.
After celebrating the newness of life, we're now back to the same old, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
It's good to be back with you on this early spring day, the day we're recording this. It was a little funky yesterday morning, but today it's bright and sunny and supposed to get up to 67 today. Enjoy it while you can, folks. We got a quote-unquote polar vortex, which used to be known as an Alberta Clipper, coming this way, and we're supposed to be below normal temperatures for about 10 days in April.
Well, you know, again, Chuck, what's normal? Because every year we hear we're supposed to have, now, if it's the average temperatures, well, folks, remember, we live in the Midwest. It's April. It's very early spring. Chuck, I remember, I was just talking about this the other day with some friends. The year was 1987. The date was April the 7th, and at least 8 inches of snow fell on the night of April the 7th, 1987. I remember that well because I was in college at Ohio State, and we had this campus-wide snowball fight after the snowfall.
with the 50,000 students on campus, that could have gotten really out of hand real fast.
And it kind of did.
Those kind of things turn into riots before you know it, and you know.
Yeah, that's the reason why. By the time it got down to the South Campus Oval and things started getting, say, well, a little confused, a number of us who were from the North Campus end decided it was time. We've had enough of this. We're going to head back to the dorm.
Yeah, the discretion is the better part of valor. Yeah,
and the better part of staying out of jail for the night.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's what's in. While you were at Ohio State University, I was at Michigan State University, and so you don't snow in April. Hey, that's the norm, baby.
That's the norm. You see, there you go. In Michigan, that is the norm.
And the fact is that you would be shocked if you didn't have at least some snow in April. And April's when you normally get the really, really heavy snows, like 15 inches, that kind of thing, especially up there.
Oh, yeah.
Because the air starts to get warm, which means it gets moisture laden. And then a cold snap will come and the water precipitates as snow. And voila, you'll get these heavy, wet, 15, 18-inch snowfalls. And the thing about it is, as versus the snowfalls that come in January, is sit there.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit there. And they sit there until March or April.
Yep.
The ones that come in April, 2 days, maybe 3 days, and your 15 inches of snow is gone. Because the temperature's gone back up to 50, 60. 65, that kind of thing. And that's kind of what we're seeing.
Absolutely.
Here. You know,
so in other words, just hold tight now for a couple of weeks and we'll be back into flip-flop and shorts weather, which is where we were at here about last week.
Well, you know,
I know because I went ahead and broke the mold and mowed my yard for the first time during the 2016 season.
You know, the flip-flop thing, flip-flop and shorts is all based on it's all regional. When I was in Michigan, people would wear shorts and flip-flops until mid-November. Now, you'd layer up on top, but people would still wear shorts. It's sort of like, what are you willing to put up with in order to maintain the illusion that it's still warm outside?
And I think people would put up with an awful lot to maintain that illusion.
You know, honestly, in Michigan, people start putting on shorts on a good day after a long winter. 58 degrees is warm enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do it, especially in the afternoon when you hit peak temperature. After that, you go back to jeans and a sweatshirt. You know how that works. But it's all a matter of what are you used to. Now, in the middle of summer, if you get a 58-degree day, everybody's freezing.
Yeah, it seems like it. You know, and again, it's a situation where, like I said, you wait 2 weeks and we'll be right back into the 70s again, and everybody will be complaining about how hot it is.
Yeah.
But
global warming is here, and we're all going to die, right?
But Chuck, though, there are some things that you can count on, and that is that we live in the Midwest, and so the weather will change without notice and without consulting us first. Another thing we can count on, and we're seeing it now, is that the silly season actually is about as silly as it can get, and not just on the presidential political level, but also on the legislative level. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on around the country. We, you know, it's been a couple weeks. You know, we took the resurrection holiday off, took a little break. So we're back. I hope everyone, first of all, had a blessed resurrection observance, understanding the Lord's work for us that we don't deserve and we don't merit, but is provided for us as a free gift, his grace and his love, through the sacrifice of his son, Jesus Christ. And hopefully all of our listeners are counted in that Lamb's Book of Life. But we also are coming into this scenario that we're done with the Ohio primary. And of course, you know, true to form, John Kasich won the Ohio primary, Chuck, like he predicted. Now he's going out on a big limb there to predict that. But perhaps maybe he was, because, you know, if you take a look at the numbers, it wasn't necessarily a slam dunk win for the sitting two-term governor of his own state.
Supposedly wildly popular, and he couldn't pull over 48% of the vote.
Actually, it was 46%.
46,
in fact, he was even lower. And remember, folks, this was in a Republican primary that we are starting to realize as we analyze the numbers wasn't just Republicans voting. These were crossover. There were a lot of crossover votes, Chuck. I know reports in some counties, especially up in Delaware County, where I had some friends running, that as they're looking at the numbers, it seemed that in a county where there were 28,000 registered Republicans, there were 51,000 votes cast in that Republican primary for certain seats. Now, what does that mean? That means that 23,000 either previously affiliated with Democrat or previously unaffiliated voters, i.e. the independents, crossed over and pulled a Republican ballot for any number of reasons, Chuck. I mean, and honestly, I'm not sure it was anything down ticket. I do believe the presidential was a big key to that. But if you factor that in, that means that John Kasich got his under 50% win in his own home state, having to rely on the help of independents and Democrats. In other words, he had to win Ohio like it was a general election and not a primary.
And how much of the votes for Kasich were not so much pro-Kasich, but anti-Trump?
And there is another factor involved, Chuck, because there were a number of those. As a matter of fact, it kind of went both directions, but I'm sure that it was probably heavier on that side. Because I personally witnessed a individual who shall remain nameless, but who is a leader in Ohio in the pro-life and pro-family movement, state to me, face-to-face, better than we are now because we're on Skype, face-to-face, that we've got to vote for Donald Trump. And I looked at this individual and said, are you kidding? Have you lost your mind? And the answer back to me was no. We've got to keep John Kasich from brokering and creating a contested convention, and so we've got to pull the lever for Trump. I hear the silence on your end, Chuck.
Yeah,
that's the response I had to this individual as well. Like, you must be joking.
This is the kind of strategic voting that got us Barack Obama in 2008. If you recall, Barry, how many times did we warn people who were close friends of ours? Who were who were playing this game of anybody but Hillary. And if you recall, we both said at the time, just directly after the election, basically around February or March 2009, okay, you got somebody other than Hillary. How's that working out?
How's that working out for you? That's right.
My brother and I have discussed this, other people I've discussed this with, and all of us have come to the conclusion we would have been better off with Hillary Clinton by far than we were Barack Obama. And it is essentially because Hillary would not have been allowed, even by a liberal Congress, to get away with the stuff that Barack Obama has gotten away with for a myriad of reasons. A, the guy's charismatic. You can't take that away from him. At least he was charismatic up until maybe the last year or so. some of that charisma has, the shine on that orb has come off a bit. And B is everybody's afraid of being called racist for opposing his policies. This fear of being labeled a racist thing. And in fact, that has been used semi-effectively. It's only effective with people who are incapable of critical thought. But the whole thing about, for instance, Supreme Court nomination of Merrick Garland, people oppose his nomination because they don't want a Supreme Court justice appointed by a black man. Well, folks, he's already appointed two justices. They were both affirmed, unfortunately, with rather lopsided votes. Something, by the way, that Republicans don't get. Republicans don't get lopsided favorable votes for their Supreme Court nominees. Generally, they have to be fought for. You have to fight for 67 votes. And that's what's required. With everybody in the Senate, 67 votes is what is required for a nomination to be confirmed. One thing you did say, by the way, when we started this, you made the statement that the silly season has gotten as silly as it can possibly get. I want to warn you about that.
I said it's getting pretty silly. Maybe I did say that.
You did say that, and I want to warn you, that's sort of like walking into a bear's cage with a raw steak.
Yeah, it is, because you know what? We could get a little crazier before we get
yes,
it, you're right.
Never tempt fate or God that way. Oh, no, it can get much better than this.
It's like, oh, you've seen nothing. Yes.
Yes, that's right. Never walk into a hungry bear's cage with a raw steak, and that was pretty close to it. This is getting more and more and more interesting because, well, let's face it, John Kasich is suffering under the delusion he can walk in a contested convention. He's going to be the guy. I'll be quite honest. It even looks to me like some of the GOP establishment is looking at him and saying, oh my gosh. Kasich is arguing that based on his electability, quote unquote electability, he has seen these numbers that you were talking about, like up in Delaware, that saw people coming out to vote, independents and Democrats coming out to vote for him. Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. One of them is, it's the, what did Rush Limbaugh, Operation Chaos. The whole thing about coming out. Operation Chaos, by the way, was one of the things that helped get us Barack Obama as president. If you'll recall what Operation Chaos was, it was basically an open primary states crossover and vote for Barack Obama. Because, you know, to deny Hillary the nomination, and as we've already said, Hillary would have been much better than what we got. Yeah, so Kasich thinks that's going to translate, that a primary vote is going to translate to a general election vote. Well, that depends on the nominee. There are a lot of people, it came out in New Hampshire when Kasich was running up there. He did the same thing up there. People crossed over and voted for him up there because they didn't like Hillary's corruption, and John Kasich was closer to Hillary's position than he was to the rest of the Republican field, including liberals, including you might have seen maybe like he's close to George Pataki or maybe Chris Christie, maybe. But the fact is that what was going on there was John Kasich was running to the left in the primary. Well, that is a guarantee to make sure that you don't get the Republican base vote in November. So basically, if Kasich somehow got the nomination, which again, I don't think is really possible, it would be another case like 2008 and 2012. The base will sit home, not voting for him, even if the nominee is Hillary, not voting for him, flat out. Because that's what happened to Romney and that's what happened to McCain. People were so sickened by their go along to get along. And, you know, Romney was and is a liberal. And absolutely, that's the whole problem with the GOP establishment. They're trying to move toward the quote unquote center, which really means the left.
Means the left.
Yes. Yeah. A centrist is a leftist who basically is nicer. And that's where Kasich is starting out, and he apparently missed out on the class they talk about. And if you recall, McCain did this, and Romney did as well. You run to the right during the primaries, and you run to the center during the general.
Well, right, it's the old rule of thumb: run as hard as you can to the right in order to secure the nomination. Run as hard as you can back to the middle to win the general. That's right.
And who broke that mold? Who was the candidate that you can think of in the last maybe 40 years, who broke that mold?
Well, Reagan broke that mold because he didn't run back to the middle.
Bingo. Bingo. Ronald Reagan broke the mold. He said, no, I'm not doing that. Now, he, in order to secure the nomination, he had to make some concessions. One of them was George H.W. Bush as his vice president. I can guarantee you he did not want George H.W. Bush.
Well, after George H.W. Bush was president for 4 years, most people didn't want him either.
Yeah, and most people figured out why Reagan didn't want him. But, and also, it was guys like Caspar Weinberger and George Shultz in his cabinet. I mean, those are to be quite honest, Jimmy Carter, as liberal as he is now, wasn't always quite this far left. And in fact, Pat Robertson was involved. I can remember reading this in a book that Robertson wrote years and years and years ago, decades ago, where he talked about the fact that he had acted something as a consultant for Jimmy Carter, you know, not unofficially right. And that kind of thing. And Carter came to him in tears and said, they're forcing these people on me for my cabinet. That's what happens. The party says, you're not getting elected unless we get this. We get this person.
Well, and that's kind of what seems like the party's trying to do right now, Chuck, if it comes to the idea of Donald Trump actually coming into the convention with enough delegate support, but not quite the full amount to win the nomination. And that is the reason why Paul Ryan's name has been popping up lately. That's the establishment's, I guess, break glass in emergency scenario, where they're now touting up potentially Paul Ryan coming in to be a compromise or a concession candidate if they get into the convention and neither Donald Trump nor Ted Cruz or John Kasich, I'll go ahead and leave him in the mix, John Kasich have enough support in order to secure a nomination, regardless of how many times they cast ballots.
Yeah.
Now, Romney had thought he was going to be that guy, but I think he got a taste of reality here not too far away, and now he has jumped off, and now, and from what I gathered, he didn't come out with an endorsement in the Utah primary, but he basically said publicly that he was going to vote for Ted Cruz, which he didn't say he endorsed Ted Cruz. He just said he was going to vote for him in the primary.
Yeah. Well, and some of that stuff, honestly, is damaging to Cruz.
Well, it couldn't be any more damaging than one of his most ardent and vocal supporters who, and I understand from the Cruz camp position, and if you can follow this, if our listeners can follow this, and that is Glenn Beck is all in on Cruz. As a matter of fact,
beyond all
in. He's beyond all in. He's actually stated in more than one venue now that Cruz is actually the fulfillment of Mormon prophecy. And Chuck, you and I have talked about this prophecy before on this program, and that's what's called the White Horse Prophecy. And that's the fact that the country is going to be in turmoil. The Constitution is hanging by a thread. You know, freedom is about to be lost, but there will rise up a leader who will reunite the country under the Constitution and bring us back into this glorious renaissance of constitutional government. And historically, Chuck, in reading that prophecy, the person who's supposed to be doing that is supposed to be of the Mormon religious persuasion.
That's right. He's supposed to be a Mormon, and I'm not sure. I'll be quite honest. Who knows if Glenn Beck is the mainstream of
Mormonism? Well, who knows? And probably not is the answer. But the key is, though, folks, last time I checked, Ted Cruz was Baptist. And I think that's about as far from Mormonism as you might possibly be able to get in the modern political.
Right. It depends on which iteration of Baptist he is, but nonetheless, he is not Mormon. Barry, this whole thing is extremely interesting. There are parts of the White Horse Prophecy, that's what this is, that we really probably won't go into. But if you hear the phrase, the Constitution hangs by a thread.
Yes.
That is a key word. Whenever you hear someone utter that, they are either Mormon or under the influence of a Mormon, because that is the phrase that is in the White Horse Prophecy. The Constitution will hang up by a thread, and the White Horse Prophet will come in and win this giant Armageddon-like military battle, and then everyone will convert to Mormonism.
He'll right all the wrongs, dry all the tears.
Yeah.
You know, restore balance to the universe and get us off of daylight savings.
And it all goes along with the idea that certain anointed Mormons become the god of their own planet, which, honestly, these days, a lot of Mormons don't even know that's part of their doctrine. So, and I don't think we should go too far into that. But the fact is that there are parts of that prophecy that are don't sit well for people who refuse to convert to Mormonism after it's all over. And maybe that's the White Horse Prophet himself. Of course, you know, I'm trying to figure out. As minute I read that thing Beck put out, how can this be done? And the answer is I can't figure out how. I'm not sure it can be done.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. So,
but in any case, Glenn Beck has gotten in trouble for saying that evangelicals are not obeying their God by voting for Donald Trump, and I'm like, well, that may or may not be true. However, that's a dangerous place to go. That is a majorly dangerous place to go. And I think many people have issued the sentiment that they weren't evangelicals weren't obeying their God when they voted for Clinton's or for Obama. There are all kinds of things you can in dangerous places you can go where it's you're not obeying God if you don't vote for this person. And you know, Cruz is sort of like, well, he'll take the support. My gosh, if somebody wants to come out and support you that's got an audience like Glenn Beck has, who would turn it down? Who would be that foolish?
I think it would be very difficult for anybody to do that.
Yeah. And
so, I guess the reason why I said I get why, you know, he's not like publicly repudiating, you know, all the stuff that Beck is doing. So.
Yeah, yeah, and again, this is what always makes the silly season one of the most fun, is the coalitions that develop. You just never know who's going to hook up with who when. I find it interesting that, for instance, Chris Christie has come out in support of Trump. But when I think about it, I'm not all that surprised. What has Trump done for the state of New Jersey? Well, he's brought him, at least at one point, he brought him a lot of land development, and he brought him a lot of gambling revenues, which is part of the surprise about evangelicals supporting Trump. My brother pulls his hair out, and he and I have been talking about this because we're working a lot more closely together these days. We're sharing an office at this point while I remodel and get mine ready for me to move back into. And he and I were talking about this, and he says, I don't understand evangelicals supporting Trump, who basically has made millions on gambling casinos, some of which have strip clubs in them.
Yep, that's right.
And the argument is that, well, Trump doesn't own the strip clubs. Well, he owns the building where the strip clubs are, and he owns the building where the gambling takes place. Now, is gambling non-Christian? Okay, we could argue this all day long. I personally, and if you recall, we got into a thing about, with a friend, a mutual friend, about poker, about friendly poker matches.
Sure.
And I said, look, yeah, for the most part, your Christian liberty probably covers that. However, if you want to look at it from a strict viewpoint, gambling is a sin because what you have done is you have decided to take the provision that God has made for you and say, I can turn it into something else under my own, with my own skill and quote unquote luck.
Right.
Because let's face it. Yeah. Is there skill playing poker? Yeah, there is, but there's also luck. If you're not drawing the cards, you can have all the skill in the world, and then the skill will tell you bail out of this hand right now. So, again, you can argue these things. You can't argue about a strip club. The fact is that this guy has made millions of dollars on Vice. That's part of Trump, the whole Trump company. That's part of the deal. And some of the things he has done, I mean, he panders by, people ask him, what's your favorite Bible verse? Well, that's a very private thing. Well, I would have just said, you know, I don't have, whatever my favorite, it's whatever I read last night. Or this morning. You know, I don't have a favorite Bible verse. I have places I like to go that I find interesting, and I don't totally understand. I find myself going back to the places I don't understand most to try to, you know, see if the Holy Spirit's going to open it up to me today. Yeah, you know, there are mysteries in the Bible that we won't probably won't solve until we get to heaven. But that's not the point. The fact is the guy doesn't have a favorite Bible verse because I doubt that he spends a whole lot of time in it. And he does seem to be rather ignorant of that particular thing, as much as he is seems to be rather ignorant of foreign policy. And when I say that, I mean, here's the difference between being ignorant on foreign policy and being ignorant on the Bible. If you're ignorant on foreign policy, Donald Trump looks at it like a CEO would. What do you do when you don't know something about a part of the business that you have acquired? What do you do about it, Barry, when you're a big businessman?
That's a good question.
You hire somebody who knows that end of the business.
Yes, you do. Of course you do.
You hire them and pay them to advise you on exactly what to do, and you turn over partial control to them because they already know what they're doing.
Yeah, you're paying for their expertise.
Exactly. How do you do that with the Bible? I mean, what do you do? That's the road to disaster with the Bible, because basically you say, well, I'm going to follow whatever you say on the Bible. That's okay.
Well, and we have to be careful on that too, Chuck, because there's an awful lot of people out there who do just that. They don't read the Bible for themselves. They basically listen to whatever's coming from a pulpit or whatever is coming from whatever, you know, popular book they happen to find in the latest Christian bookstore. And we have to have discernment with that. You really have to be careful. You have to judge. You have to weigh, you know, is what the pulpit or the book saying consistent with the whole counsel of God's word? Because if it's not, then it's leading you astray. So you're right. You can't go to a quote-unquote an expert, whether they write a book or they stand in a pulpit, to say, I'm going to turn over control to you of my spiritual life.
Yeah, we're warned to be Bereans, and Bereans always tested everything against the scripture to see if it was legitimate or not. That was the thing about being a Berean. So, you know, this particular part of, you know, his spirituality and that kind of thing. But again, evangelicals are jumping on the bandwagon because he merely mentions that. What does that mean? That means Trump might be better on religious liberty issues. However, his statements in the past should give people pause on some of the things that Trump has done in that area. He has, well, let's just face, you know, it's sort of more that, you know, you need to stay out of people's bedrooms and, you know, the usual kind of rhetoric that doesn't make much sense when you break down and do actual critical thinking about these kinds of statements. And Trump has been, he supposedly has had an epiphany on the pro-life position. I'm skeptical because he used to be very pro-choice, and he still says, I think we should, I mean, he's been very candid. We should continue to fund Planned Parenthood because they do great work on cancer screening and that kind of thing. Well, no, they don't. Planned Parenthood does abortions. They farm out their cancer screening work to other clinics where, you know, and they skim some off the top for doing that. So basically the money comes into their coffers. They take in the cash and lay it back out at a lower rate, which means money goes back in their coffers. Don't kid yourself that Planned Parenthood is just because they're nonprofit doesn't mean they don't make a profit, as we discovered. And it's amazing how quickly people forget that they were selling baby parts. But in any case, we're talking about guys like Donald Trump. Now, we've got other candidates who have major problems with major issues that voters should know about. For instance, yes, we have been very critical of John Kasich, and I've been critical of John Kasich for decades.
Sure.
And the reason is he plays conservative. Now, what do I mean by that? I know people who knew John Kasich before he got into Congress. And a good friend of this program basically yes. told me, and maybe we can talk to him about that at some point, and we'll do an interview with him, and we'll talk about it. He and John Kasich were very good friends, and they worked on campaigns together, and they worked on petition drives together, and they worked on a number of issues together, and he told me, he says, John Kasich was the real thing, was the real deal. He was one of us. And he said, then all of a sudden he got elected to Congress, and he spent two terms in D.C., and he was one of them. Now, what did he mean by one of us and one of them? Well, you know this program. We've talked about a lot of things. You can pretty much tell what we're all about. John Kasich was a constitutionalist conservative at one time. But he got to D.C. and he started hanging out with the lobbyists, and he started hanging out with the liberal members of Congress, and he slowly but surely the boat turned, and suddenly John Kasich became a GOP establishment and what they like to call a moderate, which is really a liberal. And voila. Here we are dealing with this guy who still claims falsely that he balanced the budget in the mid-90s. I mean, that's what he's running
on. Technically, if you just want to talk about the letter of the law, Chuck, of course he balanced the budget. Now, if you want to talk about the spirit, the way the budget was balanced was by pushing payments offline years into the future through various accounting tricks, and also, you know, taking GRF spending and magically blocking it over into offline spending so that it didn't show up as a debit against the budget, and voila, you've got a balanced budget.
You may have to explain what GRF.
That's a general revenue fund. Yeah. That's the main. When you're talking about, when feds talk about balancing their budget, that's all they're talking about is the general revenue fund. That's their direct monies that come in and they spend out. They really are not going to talk to you about all of the special funds and the offline, like the defense. But you think about it, Chuck. People hear about this stuff, but they don't put it together. Why do we have a farm bill? Why do we have a defense budget? They have all these other budgets because they're not locked down into the GRF, which is indexed to exactly how much money we're bringing in tax revenue. And so if you're going to spend more in the GRF, you got to raise taxes. Of course, you got to raise taxes anyway, because what you're doing is you're shifting all these pots of these spending lines off to other things like the defense budget, like the farm bill, which is actually the ag budget. And you're basically, you know, those don't count into your GRF when you're talking about balancing the budget, because those are just considered necessary expenditures that we really are. We it's like when they calculate our gross domestic product, Chuck, the GDP, there are certain things they don't factor into it.
Right.
You know, like the cost of gasoline.
So, well, exactly, and the cost of groceries.
And the cost of groceries, which, folks, you know, in my domestic economy here in my house, if I didn't figure out the cost of gas and groceries, yeah, I'd be in budget trouble really quick.
Well, look, these kind of games get played all the time. This is the reason why we're saying stupid things like the unemployment's at 5%. Well, nonsense. Real unemployment is in double digits.
Yes.
And how can I say that? Well, there are a lot of people that since 2008, and again, remember who was president in 2008 was George W. Bush. So I'm not blaming Barack Obama for this. And I'm not blaming the president totally for this, although his economic policies had a lot to do with it. The fact is that since 2008, all kinds of people have dropped out of the workforce because they can't find work. Or they would rather run all 99 weeks of unemployment and benefits before they would take a job at a lower level than they had before. Now, most people... Yes, I've been out of a job, and I've been out of a job due to a plant closing. This is what's happening. Industrial jobs are leaving this country rather rapidly. And what industrial jobs aren't leaving are being taken up by people who will work under the table and take cash payments, and by that I mean illegals. This is why you're seeing all the anger over illegal immigration. And yes, I am using the phrase illegal immigration. It's illegal to come into this country without going through the process. Therefore, they are illegal immigrants. Now, what does that mean? The facts are that jobs are being farmed out by corporations out to either, for instance, well, the thing with Disney. And folks, if you're dealing with Disney, you need to stop. Seriously, stop giving Disney your business.
Okay, and folks, that means that, you know, don't go see Civil War or any of the other Marvel movies that are coming out because Disney owns those, or
that's
all
right.
The cute little kid movies that are coming out, or the Disney Channel, or things of that nature. Now, Chuck, I'm glad you brought this up.
But let me finish my thought for a second.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
They're farming out jobs to what they call H-1B visa holders, tech jobs. So you've got people who are American citizens or are legal, at least legal immigrants here, that were doing these tech jobs. And what they've done is they've forced all these more admittedly better paid American workers to train immigrants on H-1B visas. And the H-1B program is basically one where you make the claim, and this rings where the claim rings hollow. You make the claim that you can't find enough tech workers, usually in information science and that kind of stuff. So you have to bring in these people on these visas specifically to do these jobs. Well, the fact is that Disney knows that they can get away with paying H-1B visa holders like half to a third as much as the current employees. So they lay them off and bring in these H-1B people and force them to train their replacements, and then tell them this is exactly what Disney did. And this came out in hearings in Congress, and said, basically, if you squawk about this, you're not getting your severance benefits. So if you make this public, you're not getting your benefits. Well, Barry, that's a problem. That's a major problem. But Disney's the one who's in the spotlight. They're not the only ones. So this is what's happening to American jobs. They're going out to cheaper workers because, okay, but realistically, we're in a global economy. But that doesn't mean that you can't have competition inside the United States of America, and that you have to bring in foreign workers who will work, illegals who will work for a fraction of the cost. There are other ways to work this out, and the government's looking the other way by simply opening the borders. And so this is exactly what's going on. This is why this is a problem. Okay, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, no, because you're on a theme. You're right in regard to the illegal immigration issue. But, you know, you brought up a theme like Disney. And, you know, Disney and other big businesses not only are trying to have their way when it comes to getting cheap labor, but they're also trying to have their way when it comes to changing or setting the cultural tone in this country. And we just saw this happen again, a la what happened in Indiana last year, a year and a half ago. Happened here in Georgia this last week, Chuck, as the Georgia legislature passed a religious protections legislation. And this religious protections bill, now let's not kid ourselves, folks, and don't get all excited about it, because this bill was very limited in its scope. This bill, in its protections, only protected in a very narrow way. It only protected clergy from having to officiate same-sex weddings, or faith-based organizations from being forced to hire someone who undermines their mission, or basically keeping, and it prohibited the state government, the government of Georgia, from discriminating against churches and affiliated ministries because they believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. So that's what the bill did, Chuck. I mean, that's basically all it would do. So basically, if you're clergy, you can't be forced to solemnize a gay marriage. If you are a faith-based organization, you didn't have to hire outside your faith charter. And if you believe that between marriage is a man and a woman as a church or an affiliated ministry to the church, then you couldn't be discriminated against by the state government, and that would be in terms of contracts or, you know, applying for grants or whatever it might be from the state. Sounds pretty simple, right? Well, of course it's not. Of course it's not simple, because this was war to the big business community. And big businesses like Disney, and yes, Disney/Marvel did jump in publicly on this. So did other large organizations, including Apple Computers. And both the National Football League and the NCAA, the college basketball oversight, all crying and moaning and wringing their hands that if this bill were to be signed into law by Georgia Governor Nathan Deal, it would be tantamount to institutionalized bigotry. And therefore, they would threaten to boycott and or pull out their businesses from the state of Georgia. And of course, one of the biggest ones who didn't publicly say that, but I'm guessing things happened behind the scenes, is probably one of the most well-known businesses in the state of Georgia, Chuck, and that is
Coca-Cola.
That's right. And so what happened? Yep, yesterday, the Governor Nathan Deal in Georgia blinked, and he vetoed the Religious Liberties Freedom Bill. Again, Chuck, first of all, this bill did not protect the bakers, the florists, the photographers. And when you use that term about affiliated ministries, that means that it didn't protect anything outside of a church and basically the ministries that it runs under the auspices of a church. So no pro-family group, no pro-marriage organization, Little Sisters of the Poor, what have you, would be able to exercise these protections. But it was so unthinkable to the liberal business community, and that they had to weigh in and threaten. And I mean, okay, let's think about this, Chuck. Really? You know, what is the NFL about? Are they about who should be sleeping in whose bedroom? Or are they about what can we run post patterns and kick footballs in order to score points, in order to put a good program on?
Barry, unfortunately, what has happened with things like the NFL, places like Atlanta and Georgia, especially North Georgia, are so dependent upon the money that comes in from the NFL 8 games a year that they've got to kowtow to these groups. And you and I have both seen what happens when somebody like the Atlanta Falcons demand a new stadium. Well, the county commissioners and the locals in the state all bend over backwards to find revenue to build these gigantic, grossly expensive edifices with the sky boxes and all that stuff for the big money people, so they can basically bring parties in and not watch the game. Meanwhile, Joe Blow has to sit down in the hard, uncomfortable seats. Not to sound too jealous. I've been in a skybox before. I kind of like the skyboxes. I'm not willing to do what it takes, and I'm not willing to pay the taxes so that my tax money goes to subsidize those skyboxes. And that's the problem you run into, Barry. There's a huge amount of money involved, and these guys know that if the NFL doesn't let the Super Bowl, for instance, come into Atlanta, if the NFL doesn't allow some of these sporting events to come to town, they will lose a huge amount of revenue. So rather than doing the right thing, it's all about money rather than what is the right thing and the wrong thing. And that's where we've come down to. It's all about money. And the corporations, which up until relatively recently basically plowed middle ground. They were sort of like, well, look, we don't want to get involved in these political discussions. This is not a thing for a corporation to do. No, now they're using their gigantic influence because they have opened their boards to the political correctness movement, and in fact brought board members on specifically for the purpose of quote-unquote diversity. whatever that means. And diversity actually means lack of diversity, because people like you and me would not be invited on that board because we're basically seen to be at this point passé, as are, unfortunately, most of the people who would, for instance, listen to this radio station. Our views are seen as archaic and passé and not really influential anymore. And not to say that it's not, but Christians don't act, unfortunately, as a block like they used to.
And no, that's true. We've been isolated and split and separated, and many Christians have acceded to the culture, Chuck.
Exactly.
Many Christians have just thrown up their heads and said, well, it's not worth it, you know? I want all those perks. I want the skybox, you know? I want to be liked by my colleagues and by people out on the street. And, you know, I don't want to be categorized as like being one of those, you know, jokers over there with the Westboro Baptist Church with the God Hates Fags signs.
Right.
You know, but the point is that even that is a gross stereotypical caricaturization of the real and deeply held religious beliefs of so many people. I mean, whether it's a Baronel Stutzman up in the Pacific Northwest, a florist who is, you know, being sued and has gone to court numerous times because she deferred from providing flowers or for a same-sex ceremony. Whether it's Elaine Huguenin in New Mexico, the photographer whose business has been basically destroyed because two lesbians decided that they must have her take the photos of their lesbian union, and because she's a deeply religious person, chose not to do so, but that wasn't good enough, and we used the power of government to force her and fine her. Or it's the cake bakers in Oregon who are facing $135,000 in basically extortion from their government to be paid out to people because they couldn't go somewhere else and get a cake. Well, I mean, these are the type of things that are nonsense if you think about them in a pure logical way, and you think about them devoid of the noise from the cultural charade that we have going on right now. Well, whether it's Apple or Intel or the NFL or Coca-Cola or Disney Marvel, all who have only two things in mind. Number one, how do we wreck Western culture? And number two, how do we make a big profit off of it? You divorce yourself of that, you get back to the logical reason of, you know, it doesn't make sense to say we can be tolerant except of your views that you want to hold sincerely for yourself and for your business and your family. You can't have that. You must adopt our view.
Right.
Chuck, that is the worst form of tyranny known to man. That is the tyranny of the spirits. That's the tyranny of the intellect. That is the tyranny, that is the mob mentality forcing others to accept what they have succumbed to.
Well, okay, just real quick, like, let's look at it in terms of certain things that go on in a church. We've had a mutual friend who basically told us at one point that he would bring people up on charges in his church if they didn't do certain things homeschool. If they didn't homeschool their kids, he would think seriously about bringing them up on charges in front of the session. And I said, you know, you can't do that. And this was speaking as a Presbyterian elder. I said, you cannot do that. And he said, why not? I said, you are interfering with their Christian liberty.
Exactly.
The fact is that there is no specific biblical prohibition of sending your kids to a public school. Therefore, you cannot bring someone up on charges for, and I told him, I said, I would throw you out if you brought I would move for an immediate dismissal of the charges. In fact, I would ask the other elders not to even hear it. You know, go through whatever the book procedure is. Sure. But that's an absurd position. But that's the position people are finding themselves in. You go to college these days, you have to regurgitate certain political viewpoints, or you are out of the college.
Right.
Any main university today, if you come in with a conservative viewpoint and the viewpoint that certain sexual acts are a sin forbidden by God, you can be instantly flunked out of a class and thrown out of the school. This is a dangerous trend, Barry. Very, very dangerous.
Well, and Chuck, it's not going to change. But again, this is one of those situations where I have to say that my first maxim of all politics is going to hold itself true once again, and that is that the left always outrun their cover.
Yes.
And they push too hard, too fast, and they're going to get a response. Now, you think about this, Chuck. Now, when it comes to this religious liberties bill, it's difficult because so many people in this modern culture have turned their back on organized religion, the church, whether they are doing church in their own living rooms, you know, without, you know, having the corporate fellowship and worship surrounding a church, or whether, you know, they do the frog style church hopping, where one week we go to the Methodist church, and the next week we're at the Episcopal, and the next week we go to the Presbyterian, and the week after that we're gonna try, you know, this other one. Those are all ways in which a lot of people have checked out of the traditional religious structures in our society and in our culture. And so then bringing a bill like this religious liberties bill, they find that hard to grasp why it's necessary to have this. You know, why we can't be tolerant of those who just love each other, blah, 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 blah. And why shouldn't you be forced by government to provide for whatever their demands are, whether right. it's to marry, solemnize their marriage, or bake them a cake, or take their picture while they're, you know, smooching after their nuptials have been read. A lot of people, because we're living, and many have said it, in a post-Christian culture now, don't get that. But there is one thing, though, Chuck, that I think they do. And they may get fairly quickly. And let's move a little far north of Georgia, because North Carolina just passed a law, which was signed by their governor, Pat McCrory, on Wednesday of this last week, basically barring the ability for their municipalities in the state of North Carolina from passing ordinances that would allow men to use women's restrooms. In other words, they were trying to pass ordinances in Charlotte to allow quote unquote transgendered people to be able to use the restroom of their choice of gender. So in other words, if it was a guy in a dress, he could walk into the women's restroom, and under the ordinance in Charlotte, that would be perfectly okay, protected, constitutional, and legal. Big problem was that the state lawmakers said, no, don't think that's a really good idea. And honestly, this is an issue that needs to be dealt with at the state level and not as a patchwork municipality by municipality. And so they passed a bill in the North Carolina legislature to basically make sure that these type of situations wouldn't happen. And it was for the protection of women and young people, Chuck, because what we find is in many of these instances, when these expansionist tolerance ordinances are passed, what usually ends up happening is that sooner or later you have reports of assaults, indecent exposure, etc., as people take advantage of the law in order to carry out their own sexual dysfunctions. Now, again, this is an issue that if you think about it, it resonates with people. Do you want your wife or daughters, whether they be adult or children, to go into a bathroom, a public bathroom, or maybe even a changing facility at the gym or at the school, and have an adult male in a dress there doing their bathroom in the same room that your daughter or your wife is in?
Right. Look.
You know, and again, the tolerance police of the business community, the NFL and everybody else, are screaming bloody murder about this, and it's horrible, and it's bigoted. You know, the New York Times, across their editorial page, by the editorial board, right before Thanksgiving, or excuse me, not Thanksgiving, Easter, on the Friday before Easter, headline, transgender law makes North Carolina pioneer in bigotry.
Yeah.
And they go in and using all kinds of, you know, pejorative language and trying to say how horrible it is to say that if whatever gender you were born with, that's the bathroom you need to use in when you use a public facility. You know, they're not saying anything in your own private home. If somebody wants to say this bathroom is for those who identify as women and this bathroom over here on the other side of the house is for those who identify as male, hey, go for it. If the guy in the dress wants to go over to the one for the women, hey, you're in your own house, go ahead and do it. But if you're out in public where other people in the community who don't share those same views and who expect decency and privacy when they are taking care of their business and a public facility, they don't want to have – I mean, I'm a guy, Chuck. If I've got to go to a public bathroom to go to the urinal, I don't want to have a woman who, you know, is in the process of becoming male or dresses like a guy walking into the bathroom.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I don't really want to see that. I don't really want to be in that position myself.
No.
But it's funny because all of the pro GLBT, TI, whatever that whole alphabet mix is now of the sexual dysfunction movement, are screaming bloody murder about this, and they're going to sue. And, of course, the ACLU has now filed a lawsuit, and they're screaming because it's intolerant, and the arguments that they made are illegitimate about protecting women. Well, how about this argument, Chuck? How about the argument of, how about we're going to protect the transgendered as well? Because, oh, lo and behold, and it had to happen, this just broke yesterday, that at the Stonewall Inn, yes, that Stonewall Inn, the famous New York West Village bar that where the supposedly homosexual rights movement was launched in the 60s, a transgendered woman says she was raped in a unisex bathroom by a man. So here we have, yeah, we're going to say we're not going to have this happen in order to protect you too. But of course, in New York, in the city of New York, transgendered bathrooms and unisex bathrooms are law. That's what North Carolina is trying to avoid.
Right. Well, we picked a bad time to start this topic because we're way past time.
All right.
Well, you know what we think? We want to know what you think. And by the way, please join us on April 21st for the Relationships Under Construction. You can hopefully we can take some young people and give them good training up front while they're in their teen years and early teen years and late teen years. And this is, yes, it's abstinence training, but it's much, much more than that. Again, Relationships Under Construction. The banquet is April 21st, 6:30 p.m. at the Villa Milano. You can contact us here, or you can contact www.relationshipsunderconstruction.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.
Relationships Under Construction invites you to attend their annual fundraising banquet on Thursday, April 21st at the Villa Milano. Relationships Under Construction teaches middle and high school students healthy relationships based on virtue, not physical intimacy. Help Relationships Under Construction reach more youth with the truth about relationships. To register for the Relationships Under Construction's banquet on April 21st, go to relationshipsunderconstruction.com.